As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Champions League last 16. Harry Kane or Harry Kiri? It's a big week for Bayern Munich. Benches and banquets for Mbappe as PSG head to the Basque Country meanwhile. Elsewhere, this hot calzone's not for folding. Napoli are back. Barca lose more bits. And have referees stopped watching Real Madrid TV? All those questions and many more addressed in this Totally Football Show. Hey everybody, it's Tuesday the 5th of March. Yes it is. And a slightly different Totally Football Show European edition for you today. Because for logistical reasons involving people whizzing around Europe, we've got Jules and Rafa here with us now. Hey Jules, hey Rafa.
Hi Jimbo, hi.
Hello. Ron.
Hello. Hello listener. And later on it'll be Alvaro and James. Very much a pod of two halves this one.
You started
one
with the two best ones.
Exactly, yeah. They'll be spinning enough tales of Spanish daring do and City have fun as well. But that'll have to wait because we're going to chat first of all with our friends Jules and Rafa about, let's begin with some moments of the week. Rafa, why don't you go first?
Okay, James. My moment of the week is going to be a bit strange because usually you pick like a winning goal or sort of a thing that really might change the course of the season. This one was a goal that felt very inconsequential, but it was so beautiful, so outstanding that I have to go with it. Jamal Musiala, Friday night, dribbling past four Freiburg defenders at my count.
Über Jamal Musiala, Musiala gegen Cedilia. Musiala fast den Schritt zu schnell. Genauso ist es. Musiala einmal, zweimal und Tor für die Bayern!
Had no right to score from that position, but somehow did. But as I said, it was only a 2-2 draw. And might well be forgotten, that game, or that goal, I should say, because what little momentum Bayern had after that win against Leipzig seems to have been already dissipated. And now they're going into that Lazio game on another sour note.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that Lazio game shortly. All the goals in that game were pretty special, the Freiburg-Bayern match. Excellent. Jules, you're also with us. What was your moment of the week?
Mine was a Sunday evening in Lyon, where, as we all know, Stone Wise has been doing a fantastic job at the club. But this time, it felt like a step too high to face Lens at the Groupama Stadium. Lyon were beaten quite harshly, 3-0. Even if the score doesn't really reflect too much the performance, especially in the second half, because Lyon created chances. But in the end, it's after four wins in a row in all competitions, it's a bit of a slight setback. Although Lens were always going to be a strongest than Lyon, so maybe the defeat is not a surprise, but it feels a little bit like a setback for the most informed team in the league, really, in Lyon with Rennes. Rennes, who also lost, by the way. So maybe it was not a good weekend to be an informed team.
Indeed not. Or Kylian Mbappe, but we'll touch on that later still.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Now, of course, big moments coming up midweek when we've got the Champions League last 16 second legs. Tuesday sees Bayern hosting Lazio. Lazio are 1-0 up from the first leg in Rome, eyeing a spot in the last eight for the first time in 24 years, the Roman side. The other game Tuesday, Real Sociedad hosting Paris Saint-Germain, who were 2-0 up. Long pause for you to insert your own comments about that. Wednesday, Real Madrid. Only one goal. The advantage that they hold as they host RB Leipzig, who are in fine form this weekend. And Man City are up against Copenhagen, and they're comfortable from their 3-1 lead from the game at Parken and the fact that they beat Copenhagen 5-0 last time they set foot in the Etihad. I think perhaps the game that feels most laden with jeopardy and drama and the probability of one side defending very, very deep is Bayern Lazio on Tuesday. Rafa, let's start with that. How is the build-up going, Rafa?
From a Bavarian perspective, it's not going extremely well. They had a bit of positivity with that Leipzig win, and now their 2-2 draw brought back all the familiar failings. Bayern again not consistent throughout the 90 minutes. Some decent spells, some very bad spells. Tuchel was very unhappy with the opening 45 minutes. Said we were playing harakiri for fans of...
Not Harry Kane.
No. And he said we were doing stuff that we haven't trained for, that we never discussed. I don't understand what it is we're doing. Second half, Bayern played pretty well. And if it wasn't for Lucas Hohler wonder goal and some rubbish defending, they might have well come away with a scrappy 2-1 win. But it just kind of feels apt for the way the season is going. And with Leverkusen winning, the league is sort of over, which makes this game, if it could be, even bigger still. Thomas Tuchel was asked, is this your personal final? He said, I don't think so, not from my perspective. But, I mean, for them to have a season without anything riding on it by the beginning of March, I had a look at the history books today. And I make it 1991-92 since that last happened. And that was an infamous season where Bayern finished in 10th and went through two managers and ended up with a third and had a horrific season when big changes in the club happened afterwards. So this could be historic, a sort of a low point of historic proportions.
What do you think about the game on Tuesday? You must be pretty optimistic that this Lazio at Bayern Munich can't hold out to a one-goal lead for too long.
Yeah, but Bayern need to score at least two goals. Mm. They need to ideally keep a clean sheet, which is something that they haven't done in seven games now. And we saw that Lazio defended well and looked good on the break. And I don't think they'll be playing any differently. Now, Bayern, I think, can take some optimism from the fact that Leroy Sané will be back after a bit of a knee problem. Jamal Musiala, as we said, scored that wonder goal and is beginning to hit really good form. Harry Kane, I think, is due a big goal. That's why they bought him, to score in these kind of games. And that's it, really, as far as the positives go. I mean, I don't sense the usual confidence that you would have in Bavaria after a narrow 1-0 defeat in the round of last 16. You know, they've been there before. They were beaten by Basel. They were beaten by Porto 3-1 a few years ago. There was always a sense, yeah, it doesn't really matter because we're going to turn this around. But it's been a while since they turned a tie around when they lost the first one. And secondly, Bayern themselves are so inconsistent and so below their usual expectations that if things somehow go against them, you can see them falling apart, which is not really the Bayern way, but that's where we are at this point.
Lazio have nothing to lose as well, and that's maybe where this game can be played, because all the pressure will be on Bayern, even if they are home, even if they have their fans behind. What happens after half an hour if it's still 0-0 and Bayern are not playing well? and the atmosphere, even within the ground, you can feel the tension already, and that, all of that will play into Lazio's hand. And I don't think Lazio are a very good team. Bayern are a much better team when Bayern are doing well and when they are functioning well, which is not really the case, or certainly not consistently enough at the moment. So I, when Raf is there, they usually win, to be fair. So I think they're going to win. And if only they could play PSG every time in the last 16 of the Champions League, it would be much happier.
That would be a deal.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Raf, you were there in Rome, of course. That didn't work out too well. What do you think about Freiburg, though, after this their share of spectacular goals at the weekend against Bayern, facing West Ham on Thursday?
I think it's going to be tough for Freiburg. They're not a great side this year. Played well against Bayern to come back to get that draw, but they're not as obdurate and solid defensively than as they used to be.
Okay,
they're a bit more vulnerable. They're trying to compensate for that by scoring more goals. We saw that work against Lens in the previous round, but I think West Ham will be a lot tighter, and I can just see West Ham edging it.
Okay. Before we come on to more Champions League fixtures, let's round out one or two other Bundesliga talking points. You mentioned Bayer Leverkusen going 10 points clear of Bayern at the top with 10 games to go. 34 games unbeaten now for Xavi Alonso's side. 2-0 winners at Köln this weekend. Both wing-backs doing the scoring the Bayer way. Mertzi Merman says, can Honigstein give some love to Lukas Hradecki, longtime goalkeeper of Bayer Leverkusen, says Mertzi, captain of the Finnish national team. He's one of the unsung heroes of Leverkusen's fairy tale, plus a great guy.
I think it's a very valid point that he's due some recognition and love on this pod. Hradecki had a difficult season last year, and even the year before had a few howlers. But this year has been absolutely rock solid. And yeah, one of the reasons why Leverkusen are doing so well. Of course, all the attention is at the other end where they score these wonderful goals all the time. But yeah, Hradecki and Jonathan Tah, I think we can mention as well, the German international. They've been so improved as well. Just a complete team. And I think it's really hard, as much as weird as it sounds, you know, to talk about Leverkusen winning the league, which is something they've never done. It's hard not to see them doing it now.
Mm.
I mean, 10 points with 10 games to go. That's really doable, especially against this Bayern side who you don't expect them to win their next 10 games either. So I reckon about 6 wins out of the last 10 games is probably enough.
Okay. If you see Bayern dropping more points between now and the end of the season, how worried are you about Stuttgart, who are only 4 points behind, pipping FC Bayern to second spot?
Yeah, I mean, Stuttgart are going really well. They had a slight setback with that 1-1 draw against Köln and didn't come out of the block so well after the winter break, but they're back in their swing. Girassi scoring again. They have such a youthful, exciting team. Everyone seems to be playing at the very maximum of their ability, or perhaps beyond that, because collectively they work so well. And it was another really super convincing performance. Wolfsburg did quite well and caused them problems, but Stuttgart in that 3-2 win, always the much better side. And just shows you how much you can do with a team that had good players, but just was very low on confidence and also underperforming their XG quite dramatically. So they were a little bit unlucky when Sebastian Hoeneß took over. But to take them from last in the table and the relegation playoffs to almost certain Champions League participants, I mean, they're 7 points clear of fifth spot at this point, is an incredible achievement, which if it weren't for Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso would be probably the biggest story. And of course, Bayern doing badly of the season.
Okay. And as you mentioned, that's one of the reasons why Sebastian Hoeneß is one of the names that could be in the frame for the Bayern role. You mentioned fifth place, and that's currently occupied by RB Leipzig. They have their own midweek adventure as they travel to the Bernabeu to face Real Madrid. 1-0 down. Do you hold out much hope for Marco Rose's side?
I mean, they would have to find one of those days when Real Madrid, for some reason, don't turn up. It happens occasionally. It doesn't tend to happen very often in the knockout stages. Last time I remember was probably against Ajax when they got knocked out in 2019. I think since then they've been very, very solid and don't kind of throw games away when it really matters. I thought that Leipzig were a little bit unlucky in the first leg. Perhaps deserved at least a draw. There was a very controversial offside goal, you remember, being chalked off, wrongly so, in my opinion. But yeah, it's maybe a 10% chance, but it's more than nothing.
Certainly is. Rafa, anything else we should know about the wonderful world of German football before we move on?
Yeah, a little bit of love for Maxi Bayer from Hoffenheim. 2 goals for him to beat Bremen. Bayer in fantastic form and, I think, a real candidate to make the Euros ahead of maybe one or two more established names. So watch that name. Remember the name? Maximilian Bayer.
Maxi Bayer.
And Kevin Müller, of course, the Heidenheim goalkeeper for one of the one of the moments of the season, really. I mean, you felt for him watching that, but the ball bubbling up, is that what you say? In front of him, try to kick it, and then he goes in.
Yeah, so the sort of goal you see French keepers conceding all the time. But in Germany, it's still a novelty and funny.
Great transition, to be fair.
Hey, French keepers. Jules, you're up next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Jules, Paris Saint-Germain in midweek action.
Yeah.
They had, this weekend, they had a visit to Monaco. Second straight draw, and for the second straight week, it saw Kylian Mbappe taken off early by Luis Enrique, this time as early as half-time. And, Jules, is it fair to say that PSG actually got better afterwards?
Yeah, probably. I think the second half was better than the first half. It was a great game, by the way. Finished 0-0, one of the best 0-0s that you'd seen this season. No, it's true, because there was a lot of chances on both sides, especially in the first half for Monaco. And you're right, a bit more for PSG in the second half with that Mbappe, who was not very good in the first half. But it was still a massive surprise to see him coming off at half-time, to the point that we all thought, okay, maybe he picked up an injury, maybe there's something we don't know. And then we saw him getting changed, or changed already in his tracksuit, looking seemingly quite happy on the phone, probably to his mum, saying, don't move, I'm on my way to you. And instead of sitting down with the PSG squad and the Serbs and the staff for the second half, he walked all around at the Stade Louis II Stadium to go and sit in the stands with his mum and all his people. Not actually too far from Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the PSG chairman, who I'm sure was delighted to see that his captain of the night decided not to sit with the rest of his teammates.
Not the first time he's sat next to PSG boss, of course, because Kylian Mbappe was one of the guests of honour at the reception that President Macron threw for the Qatari Prime Minister, which was...
on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, loads of great
jokes
about
it. Was that a bit weird?
It.
Last week you were telling us about Didier Deschamps, the Kanye West thing.
Yeah.
Kylian Mbappe at the reception of state.
Yeah, maybe, although the Emir of Qatar was there to see Macron and to talk about a lot of things, including, obviously, the negotiation between Israel and Hamas and all of that. So there was a lot of very serious things going on over his 2 days in Paris. But for that dinner on Tuesday night, they thought it was a good idea to invite Kylian Mbappe and other people, not just him. Mm. There were other sportsmen.
To try and resolve that dispute as well? Or
apparently, they offered him Martinique and Guadeloupe to stay at PSG for the remaining future. Also a position in the government, I'm being right. told, as a minister of some sort, I don't know. More seriously, though, it was funny to try to guess where he would be sat, how close to the Emir, how close to Macron, how close to Nasser Al-Khelaifi. I think in the end, it was quite a neutral dinner and evening. But yeah, you could see why he kind of amused a lot of people when we heard about the invitation.
Martinique and Guadeloupe, what positions do they play?
Just going forward, and you touched on this a little bit last week, the fact that there's a healthy margin and perhaps it's not going to be too critical for PSG's title. But in the Champions League and ahead of a delicate second leg this midweek away at the Anoeta, how concerned are you about this rift that seems to be building between Luis Enrique and his star player?
It's a good question, Jimbo. I don't know how much it can hurt the team. I would believe that he's going to start on Tuesday night, of course. And if PSG are a goal down with 10 minutes to go, he will stay until the end. If they're 3-0 up on aggregate or 4-0 up, even with our history of collapse, I think he can take him up. It will be fine. And I think it was easier to do in the league when they are 9 points clear of Brest in second place. And he was not playing well against Monaco. You take him off. You do the same against Rennes the weekend before. It's kind of okay-ish. They had a clear the air chat on Saturday morning at the training ground where Luis Enrique said to Mbappe, listen, there's nothing personal here. I'm just trying to make the best options for the team, including the fact that you won't be here in 4 months. So this is it. That's all it is. There's nothing personal. It's not against you. You're going to play the big games. You're going to start on Tuesday. You're going to play the game on Tuesday. I'd be very surprised if Mbappe comes off on Tuesday night, to be fair. So I don't know how much. What we know is that Luis Enrique doesn't like big stars. He clashed with Totti at Roma. He clashed with Messi at Barcelona. When he was the head coach of the Spanish national team, the star was him, no one else. So I'm not surprised in a way that he's flexing his muscles, because this is what's happening, really. It's a kind of a power fight between him and Mbappe, the club and Mbappe, Nasser Al-Khelaifi and Mbappe, on who is flexing the most. I think Kylian made a mistake by doing what he did on Friday night. I think after coming off, he should have gone and sit on the bench, not with his mum in the stand. I think that was a bad look on him, on the team. I can understand his frustration, and I think he wanted to make a point, which is fair enough. But maybe he should have thought that one through a little bit better. But I don't think he's too fazed by it. He's going to take what he's given. He's going to play as best as he can when he's on the pitch. And for the rest, I don't think he's going to create negative headlines or trying to bring tensions or anything. This is just, I think he expected it in a way, especially because Nasser Al-Khelaifi doesn't like when you say no to him. And when Rabiot didn't want to extend his contract, which is a similar position to what Mbappe is in now, Rabiot didn't play at all between January and May. They literally dropped him completely, trained on his own. And they could have done the same with Mbappe. He's better than Rabiot, so they're going to keep him. And they need him, especially in the Champions League. But in the league, I'm not sure how much they need him, really. That's why I would not be surprised if what we saw against Rennes and Monaco happens again between now and the end of the season.
Okay. Well, that's coming up on Tuesday, then, the trip to Real Sociedad. Paris Saint-Germain currently 20 games unbeaten, even though they've dropped points in the league in the last couple of fixtures. Brest in second place on a 13-game now unbeaten run. So we could be seeing Brest in the Champions League next season, which I know we'll all be looking forward to. And further down, Marseille continue to climb. Jules, Jean-Louis Gasset, this up-and-coming young manager they've uncovered there.
Jusqu'à Ismaël Assar pour Klaus dans la surface de réparation, sur la frappe et le but de Jonathan Klaus. Le break qui est fait pour l'Olympique de Marseille. Jonathan Klaus, il est critiqué, il est attaqué par ses dirigeants.
Incredible, incredible. Joe Biden doing wonders, really. And I think this team was always quite good talent-wise. There's good players there. Once you give them a bit of confidence and a bit of love, which Rino Gattuso, for all the love that we have for him, he's not really that kind of guy, is he? Gasset is much more of the grandfather that you love. You love going to on holidays, that you always have a good time with. And this is him, really. And Clermont are not a good team. And Marseille destroyed them and won 5-1. And a lot of their key players, Illiman Ndiaye scored again. Aubameyang scored again. Ismaël Assar was great again. Jonathan Klaus as well. So all those pieces are clicking at the right time because Thursday is a big game against Villarreal in the Europa League. And Villarreal scored and played well at the weekend. Solos scored a hat-trick too. So Marseille at the Vélodrome will have to be really, really good. And the Vélodrome, I think, will be fantastic, really. They have to be on Thursday night. So it was the perfect preparation, really, for them, that win away at Clermont.
Brilliant. So the previous manager is flat, but this one's Gasset. Interesting. Do you know that he's had the best start any Marseille manager has had since 1962?
Wow.
And a certain Otto Gloria. Three wins out of three.
Named after the song.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I hope Otto Gloria won eight in a row. I'm not sure if that's...
I'm not sure if Gasset will do that. There will be tougher games to come.
Right.
Said Villarreal. Then they obviously play Rennes and PSG back to back, which is gonna be
obviously
not gonna be easy. But they host PSG before going to Lille. So I don't know how high they can go. And it's not so much the gap, it's the fact that there's quite a few teams ahead of them in the table. Mm. Teams like Lille who are doing really well, Monaco are doing well, Nice not so much. They lost again this weekend. But it's certainly much better to see Marseille in that kind of form and that way than all the toxic times that we had under Gattuso and even before that under Marcelino that they will see again, obviously, on Thursday night.
Beautiful. Jules, Rafa, look forward to seeing you guys soon in the flesh. enjoy your trips to experience firsthand the delights of the midweek games.
Who do you think is going to come back qualified, Jimbo?
Between...
I think you can tell the two of us.
Bayern will have too much for Lazio, surely, in Munich. And Paris Saint-Germain, there's no way they're going to blow that. Given Real Sociedad's form.
True.
It's
an injury list.
Okay. Yeah, you'll both be fine. Jules, I believe I'm seeing you on Wednesday night, is that right? For Champions League highlights?
The following one. I'm doing the following one.
The following one.
It's me, James. It's me.
Rafa, you're there on Wednesday night.
All right.
Okay. Excellent. Good. Well, that's something to look forward to then, Brilliant. After this, we catch up with Alvo and James Horncastle. To you two fellas, I say goodbye.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Well, listener, a little bit like Chris Wilder realising his formation's completely wrong, we've ditched those two and brought in fresh faces in the shape of James Horncastle and Alvaro Romeo. Hello.
Hola.
Hola. And hello.
Hello, James.
Yeah. Well, I suppose we better start with a moment of the week. James.
Well, it was quite a tetchy weekend in Serie A. You had the Torino coach, Ivan Juric, lashing out at a journalist and then apologising for lashing out because he said to the Fiorentina coach, I'm going to slit your throat at one stage on the sideline. So he apologised. Lotito, the Lazio president, also said that there's been these reports about Serie A, led by Lotito, sort of suing the Italian Football Federation so they could become more like the Premier League and leave the federation. That was after a terrible, a game ruined by the officiating. Lazio Milan.
A lot of that.
Lazio ended with eight men.
Yeah.
And then there were lots of goals, really good goals in Serie A. Udinese Salernitana featured two beautiful goals. There was the Monza Roma game, which had a screamer consolation goal. So, I mean, there are moments of the weekend. It's very difficult to pick one.
Okay. Alvaro?
There are moments of the weekend for me too, in plural. That man, Alexander Sorloth, you will remember, he scored a hat-trick. He played for Crystal Palace. As far as I can recall, he was never capable of producing such a thing in the Premier League. But my moment of the weekend is the team of the week. It's Mallorca.
Ah.
Mallorca, and I tell you why. Number one, because they beat Girona. And the title race is diluting more and more and more because Girona is losing away from home and Mallorca beat them comfortably and they are quite comfortable on the table, far away from relegation. And number two, because Mallorca, in midweek, qualified for the cup final, altogether with Athletic Club Bilbao. We know about Athletic Club Bilbao, I've been talking about them for years, but Mallorca, under Javier Aguirre, deserve a lot of praise because they are a robust team and this has been probably one of the best weeks they have had in years. So congratulations to them.
We'll talk about Mallorca a little bit later on. First of all, though, we're touching with Jules and Rafa on the Champions League last 16 second legs. One of the narrowest margins, along with, of course, the Bayern-Lazio game, is the Real Madrid-RB Leipzig match. RB Leipzig with a big result this weekend, but I want to ask you about Real Madrid because only a draw for them. They've only had one victory in the three Liga matches since the first leg against RB Leipzig. And once again, there was a big refereeing controversy, a draw this weekend against Valencia. That letter that Sevilla sent the Liga seems to have had a powerful effect on the referees.
It looks like, yeah. I mean, it was a refereeing negligence, that's for sure. Real Madrid should have won that game because for those who haven't seen that, it was 2-2 the stoppage time of the second half and Real Madrid had a corner and the referee apparently told the player like Hugo Duro, the Valencia number 9, that Real Madrid was going to have one more chance. He was only going to let one more chance to happen. Real Madrid took the corner, Valencia never regained the ball and straight away Brahim Díaz put a cross in the box.
Dijo Gil Manzano, ahora sí, ha sacado o no, la rematada Bellingham, gol, gol de Bellingham o final. Gol de Bellingham o final. Ha marcat el Madrid. Reclamen el gol. Reclamen el gol, però final. Final, final, final. Final del partit.
While Brahim was putting the cross, the referee Gil Manzano called the end of the game. Jude Bellingham, a second after that final whistle, he scored with a header. And then the riot started. Number one, I think that is a big negligence by the referee to stop the game at that time. It's not a robbery, it's a negligence. And then Jude Bellingham went crazy. Rightly so, in my opinion, and he told the referee it's a F goal, it's an F goal, and the referee straight away showed him a red card. So, you know, again, that probably had the narrative of Vinicius vindicating himself in the ground where he was racially abused last year, had a completely different narrative, and the narrative was, again, all around the referees. Real Madrid is very angry about that, that's for sure, but fortunately for them, Barcelona didn't win at Bilbao. So the talks about the referees have been a little bit diluted because the weekend wasn't too bad for Real Madrid after all.
What do you think about Real Madrid's chances against of maintaining that lead? What do you think of the chances of letting that lead slip, I should say.
I think that they will be okay. Real Madrid, they are going to be okay because at home they've been really secure this season, confident. They've been winning pretty most of their games at home, basically. And I think that RB Leipzig are a side that, you know, they attack, but they and they have to attack this time, but they also let you attack. They concede goals in the Bundesliga. They are fifth. And they haven't had like one of these marquee wins away in Europe ever. It's true that they beat the Spurs in 2020, but that was it, really. Ever since then, they have lost big games in Europe away from home, and I think Real Madrid know how to deal in these games. They've got the superiority because they have a 1-0 away win already, and on top of that, the big players of Real Madrid are stepping up, and they are playing quite well, with the exception perhaps of Rodrigo, who has been slightly inconsistent. I would say that Real Madrid is in a good place to beat RB Leipzig.
Okay. What about Lazio? Do you see them defending that 1-0 lead away in Munich, James?
I mean, you could say that some of their players were well rested for this game because they got sent off against Milan. So, I don't know. I would say that there are some regrets on the basis that they didn't take advantage of the man advantage that they had against Bayern for what, the final 15-20 minutes of the first leg when Upamecano was sent off. But at the same time, they never expected to win that game in the first place. I think Sarri had said it was going to be a bit of a miracle for them to do that. They did it. This is probably the biggest game in Lazio's, I wouldn't say it's necessarily European history after they won the Cup Winners' Cup at the end of the 90s, but certainly in this competition it is their biggest night, perhaps the biggest night under Claudio Lotito's ownership as well, after them winning the Coppa Italia a few times. I think Sarri has it within him to outcoach Tuchel. I think when his teams are at their best, they're really hard to play through because they're really compact. They play sort of, you know, from front to back, all in 15, 20 metres. I think that's something that Tuchel was talking about before the first leg and before tonight's game as well. And they are a team that got into the Champions League by virtue of keeping clean sheets, which, you know, I think they'll need to be defensively solid in order to come away from the Allianz Arena with qualification. So it's doable. I mean, if you were going to pick a time to play Bayern at any time in the last
20 years, 30 maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe there was like, you know, times under Kovac or times
under Ancelotti. Rafa was saying before, yeah, this is statistically now the worst since the very early 90s. So
yeah.
Just, yeah.
So, I mean, but yeah, it would still rank as a big surprise for Lazio to make the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Thursday night, meanwhile, of course, you've got Europa and Conference League. One of the delights awaiting there is Ajax hosting Aston Villa. Ajax actually won this weekend, 2-0 against Utrecht, and perhaps stung by recent criticism or confusion over Hendo's role in their future plans, they put out, because he played 90 minutes, Jordan, they put out a little video of him running around and shouting. So
mentality.
Mentality was the buzzword.
Yeah, very Cruyffian.
That same night, Lazio's neighbours, Roma, have the game against Brighton. Roma, one of the form teams in Italy since Daniele De Rossi came in. Let's get on to the teams that are lighting up Serie A next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Dybala sembra intenzionato più Paolo Dybala. Va Dybala con il sinistro, rete! Il gioiello della gioia! 3-0 Roma. Paolo Dybala, mostruoso.
All right, three teams on fire in Italy. Woof. Bologna, Roma, yeah. And Napoli.
Napoli.
Napoli, yeah. Red okay. Hot. Sizzling. Roma, though, I mentioned Brighton, who've had back-to-back defeats. Roma, 6 wins now from 7 in Serie A. Woof. And the 4-1 win that you mentioned earlier against Monza. Wow. They're for real.
Yeah, they. I think they've gained in confidence over the last month. They have had a relatively softish fixture list, which I think was one of the reasons why the club changed when it did. They wanted to give the new manager a good chance. So their first games were against Verona, Salernitana, and that sort of thing. But still, I think, you know, aside from Inter have won every game, Yeah, Roma are one of the most informed teams in Europe, along with Arsenal, for example. And I think De Rossi deserves great credit for the way he has got their best players playing to their best again. So we've seen Dybala over the last two games score a hat-trick, score an assist. We've seen Pellegrini have, I think, 8 goal involvements in 9 games under De Rossi. You know, he'd been a bit of a lost cause towards the end of Mourinho's time. Paredes, again, who I think for 18 months in Italy, first at Juventus and then the last 6 months at Roma, has been really, really disappointing. Looks like a guy who was starting in most games for Argentina at the World Cup. And he's just been... He's just such a wonderfully empathetic person, De Rossi. For all Jose spoke about how empathy was really important and that sort of thing.
Empathy, they lost this weekend.
Empathy, yes. they're empathetic as well. Mm. But, you know, like, for example, with Chris Smalling. Smalling's had a really tough injury to come back from over the last, well, since August, September time. Mourinho wanted to bring him back into the team. Smalling didn't feel ready, and so he felt he was being criticised for not playing through pain, having a low pain threshold, in Mourinho's opinion. And De Rossi has eased him back in. He said, you know, we're going to have to manage him carefully, but, you know, we want Chris in the team, and I think that's been sort of appreciated. Likewise, with some of the players that they signed in the summer, which Roma were initially quite excited about, like Renato Sanchez, Hussein Awa. Again, there was talk in January that, you know, that Renato Sanchez was going to be sent back to PSG, that Aouar was going to be sold. And De Rossi's found ways to include these guys, you know, not maybe not starting them, but sort of bringing them into the team. So there's a lot of good vibes, which, you know, was not to be taken for granted after they killed Bambi and sacked Mourinho, because Jose was so popular.
Indeed. But this new Roma is pretty popular as well. It should be a rollicking atmosphere Thursday night at the Stadio Olimpico. In the league, they're busy chasing top four, but one of the teams that's in equally good or perhaps even better form is the side that they're chasing down, and that's Bologna. Wow.
Yeah.
Huge game for them this weekend, because another of the top four contenders, Atalanta, was their host. It was Atalanta, Bologna, and Bologna with a 2-1 victory with Lewis Ferguson, the skipper nowadays, with the winning goal. Woof.
Yeah, he would say he's not skipper, but, I mean, he does play regularly, whereas Lorenzo De Silvestri doesn't. Mm. But, yeah, 6 goals. Winning goal in Bergamo against Atalanta, the team that they are going up against for top four, although fifth will be likely enough to qualify for the Champions League this season. It's their best run since the 1960s. And I think particularly over the last month, they've shown that this is feasible. You know, it can last, because they've gone away to Lazio and won. They've gone away to Atalanta and won. Yeah, they came back from behind in this game as well. I think Xerxes, you know, has now started to score regularly, which was the knock on him in the first 3-4 months of the season, that he did some wonderful work in bringing his teammates into play and setting them up, but he wasn't scoring. But now he's in double figures. So it's all very exciting with Bologna, because, you know, I think the best that they felt they could hope for under this ownership was to get back into any kind of European competition. Yeah, Conference League, I think, would be seen as a success for Bologna. But the idea that they can actually get Champions League, particularly with Lazio fluffing around, and you could say, like, for example, Roma, as good as De Rossi has been, it's almost too late, because Bologna are not just matching Roma, they're winning every game. Mm. It's very hard to stay on their coat.
Absolutely. 4 points the margin right now between Bologna in fourth and Roma in fifth. And fantastic work there for Thiago Motta, as you say, 6 wins in a row. Now, the other team who've put together a run of results, Napoli. 2, in fact, are Napoli. Since last week, under the stewardship of the former Sarri and Spalletti assistant Francesco Calzona, they have beaten Sassuolo 6-1 And then this weekend defeated Juventus 2-1. And in both games, you've seen Osimhen and Kvara looking like their old selves, embracing each other. That spirit seems to be back.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm a little bit reluctant to say that Napoli are back.
6-1 though, James.
Yeah, against the Sassuolo side that looked like they could go down for the first time in 11 years. Mm. Yeah, they sacked the Onizi. They promoted the youth team coach. It hasn't worked out. He's lost his first two games. And Domenico Berardi, their best player, has just snapped his Achilles tendon, which is not good for Italy going into the European Championships, because I think he's probably their best attacking player. The Juventus game as well. How did Juventus not win that game? Like, that was incredible. I mean, Dusan Vlahovic had three really good chances. He hit the post after the game. He appeared in front of the media because he basically wanted to apologise. Another player who apologised was Nonge, one of their best young players, who was brought on and then 15 minutes later was taken off by Allegri after giving away what turned out to be the decisive penalty. Mm. A penalty that Wojciech Szczesny saved, and yet the defenders around him didn't react, allowing Raspadori to score, as he did when they played Juventus in Turin towards the end of last season, which it didn't mean that Napoli won the title mathematically, but for Neapolitans, it was like, this is it. We've won it now. So, yeah, I think it is encouraging for them going into this game against Barcelona, which isn't this week, it's next week. But all of a sudden, there are signs of life in this Napoli team, which, you know, they've been flatlining for for the last 2 months. And it does, if not change their... I mean, they're only, what, 5 points off Champions League now, James? Where are they?
Well, they have 43 points.
Yeah.
Fifth place Roma are 4 points better off.
Yeah.
But the top four, the traditional yardstick for qualification, is 8 points.
Yeah. So so fifth is doable. But again, I think it will... Their focus will very much be on this Champions League game against Barcelona.
Right.
It's actually, I was not excited at all about the first leg between these two teams because they're really in catastrophizing mode this season. And yet now I'm quite looking forward to the second leg.
Well, they're rediscovering some of the verve from last season. Poor old Barca, Alvaro. Bits falling off left, right and central. Frankie de Jong... And Pedri getting out. Yeah, and they're likely to be out for, what, a month or so?
Well, Frenkie is going to be out until April. And with Pedri, Barcelona is going to be very cautious. They won't rush him because Pedri has had 6 or 7 muscular injuries since September 2021. Because in the 2021 campaign, Pedri was stretched more than a human should be stretched, and especially an 18-year-old footballer should be stretched, because he played pretty much every game for Barcelona in his first season in the top flight. Then he played for Spain in the Euros until the semifinal, and then he played with Spain in the Olympic Games, also up to the final, with extra times and all that. Pedri, that year, I think that didn't make a good investment on himself, or whoever had to look after Pedri, Luis de la Fuente, the under-21 manager, Luis Enrique, Ronald Koeman, didn't look after Pedri properly. And I'm not saying that the current injuries of Pedri are a result of that season, but it looks very likely, and many people have that theory, and I kind of want to buy it too, because otherwise it's inexplicable that this guy has had so many injuries. When it comes to Frenkie, it's different. It's just an ankle problem, a ligament issue. By the way, what a weekend in La Liga with injuries, because Diakabi, Moussa Diakabi, the Valencia centre-back, he broke his knee in awful fashion. The footballers of Real Madrid and Valencia were just holding their heads in disbelief, and Diakabi will be lucky if he plays football again, because this is not a normal knee injury. It's worse than that. He broke basically three ligaments, I think, not only the ACL, but a couple of more. I'm not an expert in injuries, but that was awful. But yeah, back to your point about Barcelona, yes, they got a draw in Bilbao, but two important players pick injuries, and these two players are the compass of Barcelona, together with Ilkay Gundogan. So whoever plays with Gundogan against Napoli is not going to offer neither the physicality of De Jong, neither the quality of Pedri.
All right, and they're already missing Gavi for the rest of the season after he did his ligaments, his knee ligaments, back in November.
In November with Spain, yeah. So, you know, it's going to be difficult against Napoli for that reason mainly.
But in the long term as well, people beginning to seriously worry about how much Pedri's career could be compromised by these ongoing issues.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Pedri in 2021 was a very special player. He was 18, but he was playing with composure. He was very strong as well. And I remember him playing against Juventus away. And basically, he was playing on the left. I don't know why that game or most of the game he was there. And he got in front of him Juan Cuadrado. And Juan Cuadrado didn't know how to deal with him. Not because Pedri is fast or anything like that, but because Pedri was, with his feints and his movements, he was leaving Cuadrado behind with such an ease. And then, if you watch his highlights from that year, he was sometimes giving passes that you said, what are you doing? Where is this pass going? What are you looking for? And then the pass was always finding somebody. He was capable of seeing on the pitch things that you as a TV spectator couldn't see. Hmm. And there is nowhere better to watch football probably in front of the TV, watching all the spaces. And Pedri found still some spaces that you couldn't see. But ever since then, Pedri has had good moments. Last season he was important when Barcelona won the league. But he hasn't been the guy with the authority to take the reins of the midfield and impose his game. In 2021, he was that player. Now he's not. And I think that is down to the injuries. He has lost a lot of confidence. He doesn't get the ball as much as he did get it before. He's not as significant or as impactful on the game as he was in the past. And it's a real shame because that happened to Ansu Fati as well, another prodigy of Barcelona Academy. Look at Ansu Fati now. He's still looking for his best form. It happened to Pedri. Gavi picked an injury, another youngster. I'm just feeling for Lamine Yamal and Pau Cubarsí. They are 16 years old each. And, you know, Barcelona cannot misuse them, cannot make them play more than they should.
Who steps up for Barcelona, not just against Napoli, but in the weeks to come?
Well, it has to be Ilkay Gundogan, obviously. Oriol Romeu may have a chance. Christensen is playing as a holding midfielder. He will stay there. And Fermín, another player from the academy who happens to be fast. He's got verticality, but he is not a player who guarantees possession. He is not a conceptual midfielder, to put it some sort of way. He doesn't have the game in his head. He doesn't have a peripheral view. So it changes Barcelona's style to play with Fermín in midfield. But, you know, these are the weapons they've got. These are their tools. And I think that still they are as good as Napoli, if not better.
Okay.
Yeah.
1-1. The scoreline from the first leg. It was 0-0 against Athletic Bilbao this weekend. How was that game?
It wasn't very good. Nope. Athletic Club Bilbao rotated a little bit. Some of the best players weren't there. Mm. Nico Williams, because he had a suspension. Ollán Sanzet, because Valverde decided to rotate him. Unai Gómez, a player who looks like Sylvester Stallone when he was 25, 26 years old. I recommend you to have a look to Unai played, and he did a good job. But the game was marked, in my opinion, for the lack of ambition of Barcelona and Athletic Club Bilbao's tiredness as well. And then losing Pedri and Frenkie in the game obviously didn't help. So it was a bad game, but the lack of ambition of Barcelona is something that caught my eye, because Barcelona could have capitalized on Valencia's draw against Real Madrid.
Right. The tiredness of which you speak for Athletic, down to the fact that Thursday night they were busy knocking Atletico out of the Copa del Rey and booking their place in the final.
Yeah, with the Williams brothers having a great night again. It was one of those nights in Bilbao. I mean, Athletic Club Bilbao has dignified the Copa del Rey competition over the last five, or well, in the competition's history, because we have won it 23 times. But also in the last 5 or 6 years, we have managed to reach finals, semifinals. The attendance at San Mamés on Thursday was the highest ever attendance for a football game at the new ground. I still believe that the biggest attendance was for the rugby Rugby European Championships in 2018 in San Mamés. But still, the communion and the bond between the stand and the team on Thursday against Atletico was very special. So now we are qualified for the Cup Final. It's on the 6th of April. I think that many supporters are going to be disappointed, because there are only 20,000 tickets for each team, and Athletic Club Bilbao has about 45,000 season ticket holders, and none of them will be able to go to La Cartuja in Sevilla. But yeah, there is a good chance for Athletic Club Bilbao. I mean, we have lost
four finals against Barcelona in the last 14 years and one against Real Sociedad. I don't want to be too optimistic, but Mallorca doesn't have the level of Real Sociedad or Barcelona, especially Pep's Barcelona at the time. But, you know, little by little, I don't want to go to be too enthusiastic either, because then I could be very disappointed.
Of course. Mallorca this weekend beating the former league leaders, Girona.
Yes, because Mallorca is a very competitive side. They are far away from relegation already. They've got a manager who is a fox. He knows tactically many things, and he knows La Liga very well, like Javier Aguirre. He is rather defensive. His teams are normally very physical. But Javier Aguirre was the mastermind behind the Osasuna's success in early this century, when Osasuna reached the Champions League, or they were about to reach the Champions League, because they didn't make it through the playoffs. He took Osasuna to a cup final as well. And El Vasco, Javier Aguirre, has managed to get this out of Mallorca. A Mallorca side that I believe that they've got dangerous players as well, like Sael Larín, the Canadian footballer, Murici, Abdon Prats is a very good striker to play 20-25 minutes too. So it's not going to be easy. Mallorca are going to be far from relegation by April, I have that feeling, so they will be able to prepare the cup properly. Maybe not so much Athletic Club Bilbao, because they will be still involved in trying to qualify for the Champions League.
Magnificent. Mallorca will be playing Barcelona next weekend at the Montjuïc. That's actually on Friday night, so yeah.
I would like to single out very quickly Villarreal. Because
okay.
Last week I mentioned how much they are improving.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that they are going to be candidates to win in Europe, but they are playing against Olympique Marseille this Thursday. Marcelino is coming back to the place where he wasn't wanted. And Villarreal can be dangerous. And the best players of Villarreal are little by little coming back to form. Gerard Moreno being one of them. No injuries for him lately. Mm. And especially Sorloth, I said that before. But 3 goals for the Norwegian in the weekend. And he is becoming a very dominant footballer in La Liga. So let's see how Villarreal does.
All right. Well, if you're puzzled which game to follow on Thursday, because there are so many great Europa and Conference League fixtures, why not catch the highlights with me on Thursday evening after the dust has settled, after the last whistle has peeped. Brilliant. That's pretty much it for today's Totally Football Show, methinks.
Good.
Many thanks, James and
pleasure.
Alvaro.
Thank
and
you.
And, of course, to Jules and Rafa earlier, Liam and Charlie in the booth, and you, listener. We're back at a slightly earlier time next week. It should be out on the Monday. So I hope you'll be joining us for that. For now, from all of us here and not here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.